What's happening, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another edition of Bets and Ball Games with Edwards and Greason for Southeastern 14. And before we get started, let's tell you about our great friends over at Bet Online, your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right to all the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE, that's all caps, BLEAV, for your 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. Bet online. The game starts here. All righty, Mr. Greason joining us from Chattanooga. How are we doing?
We're doing great. Trying to stay cool. The triple digits here in southeastern Tennessee, and it's crazy how quickly the summer flies by. I know, as sports fans and people who do dabble in this as a living, it feels like the weeks are long before football season, but the days get real short. Especially when kids are out of school and there's a lot of fun things to do in and around Southeast Tennessee.
Yes. So today is Oklahoma Sooner Day, but before we get there, we're going to talk a little NBA draft. It's a fairly wild story about Duke's Kyle Filipowski. And we are also going to talk some Texas A&M Texas rivalry. We're going to tip our visors to the Tennessee baseball team, and I think we would be a little bit remiss if we didn't mention last night's shenanigans in Hotlanta. And let me just give you the updated odds to win the 2024 presidential election at Bet Online. Donald Trump. Now, I don't know what Bet Online had Trump's odds at yesterday. I know that only one of my three accounts offers political odds. And yesterday morning, Trump was minus 150 and Biden was plus 130. But that account has not reposted yet today. But at BetOnline, currently, or at least as of about an hour or so ago, Donald Trump was the minus 185 chalk, risk 185 to win 100. Joe Biden was the plus 350 underdog. Gavin Newsom was plus 600 or 6-1. Kamala Harris, 14-1. And Michelle Obama, 14-1. So since we are an SEC show, I'm going to compare the start of that debate last night to when Alabama was playing Clemson in the first play from scrimmage. Tua threw that pick six to Clemson. I think Biden's first sentence was a pick six for Trump.
Well, I don't know if we're going to compare it to SEC football games gone squirrely, then I'm going to go the BCS title game when Marcell Dareus knocked Colt McCoy out on like the second play of the game, and everybody knew it was over. Because the deer in headlight look that Joe Biden perfected last night, I don't know even how this is possible, but one, he looked like a confused bingo player at an old folks' home who did not know if the last number called was I-18 or O-68. And Donald Trump is in his 70s, and he may, in Biden's appearance and his slow speech pattern, made him look like Matt McConaughey, for God's sakes. So, I mean, it was – I'll say this, and I think most of America is galvanized in either camp, but I don't think it's a galvanization of support for either candidate. It's a galvanization of voting against the other guy. And that is such a sad state of affairs, because I watched the debate last night, and my 16-year-old son was on the couch, and he watched it too. He's starting to become aware and becoming more interested. And he looked up and said, both rhetorically and distinctly, in America, these are our two options. That's what we have?
Right. Now, I just like despise all politicians. I feel like we haven't had two good candidates in like 30 years.
But, hey, we've been voting against people for a long time now.
Right. Right, right, exactly. Like I feel like it's kind of normally like that, but not to that extent. Last night, I'll also just note that that just to be the Democratic nominee, and I don't even know if these odds were on the board yesterday. I thought these odds had gone off the board months ago, but Biden is only a -140 favorite to be the Democratic nominee, and other. Whatever, Gavin Newsom, Michelle Obama, Hillary, whoever, Kamala. The other is even money, and Biden's only -140. So, and,
I mean, I don't know if you could find a place to there. I know there's only one more scheduled debate. I'd bet any amount of money in my pocket. I bet a mortgage payment there will not be another debate. Trump's got nothing to gain from another debate, and. The Democrats can't afford for Biden to go out there and do that again.
And whatever meds they had him on for the State of the Union, they didn't have that recipe concocted yesterday. Or he's just so far gone, that recipe's not working anymore.
And, I mean, again, I know you're not coming here for political commentary, and we're going to turn the page. Yeah. But his wife did him no favors in the post-game rally either. Made him look like just a... Stand over there and try not to bother anybody.
Yes, yes. No doubt about it. All right, we'll move on. We will move on. And let's talk about the NBA draft, which is just becoming half the first round of just not guys that played college basketball. So, you know.
Well, I think there are a lot of things, a few layers here. And, I mean, one, I think it's a continued testament to how much John Calipari underachieved when you've got that many NBA dudes, including two top 10 picks, and you don't even sniff. I mean, you just underachieve every year with all that talent. Now,
you get now coached by Oakland, yes, and you lose to Oakland.
And, I mean, you got the first college player drafted. You've got one of the most creative – sub-6'4 scores in Rob Dillingham. You got other guys going coming off the board later picks and the next day. It's just a continued – because if you put together an NBA team of just Calipari players, you win. I mean, they go on a Celtics type run.
And I mean,
the Celtics in the 50s run.
And there would be guys that have made All-Star games that wouldn't make that roster.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Exactly.
Tyrese Maxey at 24 a game last year is coming off the bench.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And but you look up, and I think a couple of the big winners and losers. I think a big winner are the Lakers, and yeah. I know everybody's talking about Bronny James today and going to play with his daddy and all of that stuff. So what? I mean, everybody knew this was going to play out this way. I mean, package deals are the part of sports. Forever. I mean, we've known this since in Little League. Because if one stinky kid who plays right fields, his older brother is the best player in the league, you're going to take them both. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But getting Dalton Connect at 17, who's a 6'6 kid with size and underrated athleticism and legit range.
I mean, shooter in the draft.
Well, Reed Shepard's a better percentage shooter, but well. – I mean, Dalton's an unbelievably great contested shooter. And, I mean, he's a plug-and-play starter right now. So,
yes. So
it losers in the draft, I got two. I got USA basketball because the international game is kicking our butt. I mean, in terms of raising prospects, I mean, look around the NBA right now. I can make a hard argument that the top four players this past season were internationally born. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, born in Canada.
Jokic.
Nikolai Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Luka Doncic.
Yep.
So, I mean, what used to be our game is certainly now global. But the other loser, I don't understand how Memphis thinks Zach Edey is worth the ninth pick in a draft. Couldn't in a league that is positionless and has as many point centers as they do back to the basket guys, that kid can't guard anybody in space. And offensively, he's bad in the pick and roll. So, I mean, yeah, he's 7'4", and he's a filing cabinet with a head on it. But by God, he can't play in this modern NBA.
Yeah, and look, if that's who you want to take, and I always say this about the draft, I don't care what the sport is, trade down and get a couple assets and then pick him five picks later. Why don't people do that? I don't. He was. I wonder what, and this is my fault, I probably should have known it. I wonder what his over-under was on the NBA draft. I mean, like, I don't remember. I hadn't looked at the mock drafts in a week or two, but
I saw him always in the 20s. Always in the
20s. Always. Never saw him higher than like 22 or 3 or somewhere in there. Yeah, I whoever had the under on him, assuming he had an over-under, congratulations to you because you won easily. So the other SEC player, all right, so Shepherd third. We got Dillingham goes eighth. We got Connect going 17th. And then I was kind of surprised Shireman went to the Celtics last pick of the first round. Now, he's a good lefty shooter out of Creighton. But, all right, other SEC players, not many. Antonio Reeves, number 47 overall. Did he end up in Orlando or is that a trade? I'm not sure. And then we've got – we don't have anything else.
I know.
So that means a lot of talent coming back in the SEC. So that's a good thing. Yep. All right. So, I mean, we agree. Dalton Connect is the steal of the draft. I have no idea on my Hawks and that prospect. We shall see. All right.
You mean talking about drafting the French Stacey Augmon?
or Cal Bowdler?
Yeah.
Or Ed Gray?
Think about it this way. Considering the Hawks – traded on draft day for Dominique Wilkins. At most, they have since 1982, because I've gone back and looked at it. If Al Horford gets in and Trae Young stays on this trajectory, the Atlanta Hawks have drafted two guys who have a Hall of Fame chance in 42 years.
Yeah.
That is an abysmal percentage.
But wait, three guys that have a Hall of Fame chance. You don't think
they didn't draft that? Dominique?
They traded
for Dominique. Sure.
Yes. They traded John Drew
for Dominique.
Yeah.
Now, okay. Now, I guess to be fair, conversely, they did draft Pau Gasol and traded him for Sharif Abdul-Rahim.
Great. Great move. Great move. Yeah. I'm trying to. Oh, there's so many epic draft. Fails the DeMar Johnson kid who ended up breaking his neck in a car accident. Let's not talk about it. It's bad.
The two worst ones were Marvin Williams.
And Sheldon Williams from Duke.
Marvin Williams at two, and then Sheldon Williams from Illinois went three, and Chris Paul went four.
I thought that was the Sheldon Williams Duke.
No, that was Marvin Williams.
Okay.
In golly, what year was that? 2005. Right. And then, I mean, there are so many. I mean, trading Luka at three in 2018 has got to be on the list.
Yeah, yeah.
But, all right, let's turn the page quickly. I think the Tennessee Volunteers, they won their first men's national championship since the 1998 football one. I think this baseball program under Tony Vitale is going to be there among the elite for a while because I think they've got a very strong NIL support and they've got one of the current five or six best game atmospheres in America. And I think that's going to appeal to people. So, I mean, I just think Tennessee baseball is in an unbelievable place moving forward with arguably – I think Tony Vitale has now passed Bruce Pearl and is only behind Kirby Smart in the most secure job setting across all SEC sports. Well, actually, he's third. Dawn Staley is second. Kirby is one. Dawn Staley is two. Tony Vitello is 3 and Bruce Pearl's 4. Your thoughts?
I agree with that. I agree with that on the – so who did you say? Don Staley, Tony Vitelli.
Kirby is 1. I think Kirby could kill a man in cold blood in the streets of Athens, and there'd be 12 Georgia fans say, no, I did it. Don Staley could – anything short of doing the old school political violations of being found with a live boy or a dead girl, Dawn Staley is never going to leave South Carolina unless she decides to. Tony Vitello has now passed Bruce Pearl to 3 on the list.
And Bruce Pearl's 4. I'm going to go Nate Oates 4. Oh, wait. Bruce Pearl 4. I'm going to go Nate Oates 5.
Nate Oates has to be in the conversation. I mean,
yeah, and then I'll go Lane Kiffin 6.
Yeah, but Lane Kiffin could violate any of those that we said. He could commit murder on an Oxford City street. He could be found in bed with a live boy or a dead girl. I mean, let's not test fate here. Let's just let this one roll for a bit.
That's my future head coach. I shouldn't have even gone there. Yeah, let's get it moved on. So Texas A&M rivalry getting a little as they coming back together for the first time since 2011, get a little stoked to the rivalry fire.
Well, stoked to the rivalry fire because Texas A&M had one of the best baseball programs in America. They got to the title game. They lost to Tennessee in 3 games, lost a 6-5 nail biter in game 3. But they also did it without their best position player. Their right fielder was hurt for a lion's share of the College World Series. Did it without their number 2 starter, who was also out injured. And now they lose their head coach, who went to Texas the day after he chastised the media after the game 3 loss about asking about questions about Texas, and then goes anyway. And now we're hearing reports and allegations on whether he was using a burner phone to try to lure recruits to Austin while he was still employed in College Station. There was already bad blood when Texas A&M left to go to the SEC, and now Texas A&M follows. I don't know, and I say this as an Auburn graduate who reveres the hatred of the Iron Bowl. There's going to be no game with the vitriol and the boiling blood of, and dear Lord, let Texas show up 11-0. Texas going to College Station the weekend of Thanksgiving. There was less drama and hatred and angst when William Wallace showed up at York. I mean, dear God, the just, whoo.
It's going to be tough for Texas to win that night, I think, in College Station. We'll see. We're a lot of sprained ankles and knee injuries away from that one. All right, yes, so that rivalry is back on like Donkey Kong. All right, before we get the Sooners, Kyle Filipowski. So this is an interesting story, and I don't like – we're not quite positive what all the facts are. Like, we're seeing varying stories that the girlfriend is either 26 or 28 now. So Filipowski is 20 now, I believe, and
20. He'll be 21 later this summer.
Okay. So he reportedly falls out of the first round because he's no longer speaking to his family. And it seems that when he was asked about that in his meetings, he got very nervous. And there's a lot of questions about his older girlfriend, who apparently, allegedly, was maybe 24 or 25 when she went to the prom with him. And it's being called a grooming thing by a Mormon. So a couple things to point out. One, he falls out of the first round, no guaranteed contract. So if this is a grooming thing where she's trying to get money, she screwed it up.
Well, okay. And she better motivate him to be pretty doggone good in training camp.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you pointed this out to me because I saw a picture from the prom and I was like, wow, she's pretty hot. And then I saw some other pictures. In terms of NBA wags or just sports wags, she's another one of the gals. She's not in the elite.
I mean, I can't help but think of like various scenes in a whole bunch of movies. There, hey, let's be honest. At a whole lot of these sporting events, there is a collection of, shall we say, shoppers who are attractive young ladies who show up wanting to get close to athletes because those guys make big checks and those guys live very luxurious lifestyles. So, but if she's grooming this guy, a 6'11 basketball five-star, they probably need to work on some interview skills as well. I mean, yes. Filipowski, I mean, before this story broke, if you'd asked me on Wednesday who goes first, Filipowski or Edie, I'd taken Filipowski every day and twice on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And now he's 23 picks late behind Edie.
Yeah.
I mean, he goes 32. Although, I mean, you talk about the grooming and a Mormon and what – he got drafted by Utah.
Another layer to the story. Another layer. Now, also, she's not the wife yet, okay?
No.
And so until the wedding's over and she talked him into not doing a prenup, she hasn't won anything, and now she got taking him out of the guaranteed contract in the first round. So
I'll tell you what we need before we get to the Sooners rather than later. We need Leroy Jethro Gibbs from NCIS to get to the bottom of this thing.
We really do. And this story is a very fluid situation, and we here at Bets and Ball Games will be monitoring it.
We are full of fluids. That is us.
Yes. We will be monitoring this situation, and we will get back to you on updates as they develop. All right. Are we ready to get to the 2024 OU Sooners?
Yeah. Lay down the numbers for them.
All right. Here we go. So, all right. Oklahoma last year, 10-3 straight up, 7-5-1 against the spread. Now in 2 years under Venables, 16-10 straight up, 13-12-1 ATS. Seven of their 10 wins were by double digits last year. Only two opponents they faced last year were ranked in the top 25. They go 1-1. They beat Texas, and they lose 38-24 to Arizona. In the bowl game. So here's the contrast from last year's schedule to this year's. And I'm not like, you know, we don't know who's going to be ranked what in week four, week eight, et cetera. So I just took where there's 2024 opponents are in Phil Steele's preseason power rankings. And I'll have my power rankings done here in a week or two. And I won't be referencing Phil Steele so much at that point, but, Oklahoma, 9 of their 12 regular season games are going to be played against teams in the top 33 of Phil Steele's power rankings, and 4 of their games are against teams in the top 9. So you're definitely going – I mean, I'm not going to just insult the Big 12 with any jokes or anything, but let's just say you're going to play big boy football now, and the schedule – indicates that. All right, some more numbers. So their net yardage last year, plus 1,525. Their turnover margin, plus 6. 7 starters back on offense, 8 on defense. Offense averaged 41.7 points per game last year. Defense gave up 23.5 points per class. Recruiting class per 247 Sports Composite, number 12 overall, number 20 transfer specific, 44 total commits, 1 5-star, 23 4-stars, and 20 early enrollees. All right. All right, here we go. We got also – let's see here. Okay. Of the transfers, 16 total, 4 or 4-stars. The 4-star transfers are Deion Burks, a wide receiver from Purdue, Bauer Sharp, a tight end from Southeast Louisiana, an edge rusher from Miami of Ohio, Caden Woolard, and a D lineman from TCU, Dominic Williams. All right. Our friends at Bet Online have Oklahoma's season win total 7.5, shaded to the over at a -125 price. Under is -105. Week one against Temple, -41.5. These are still Bet Online numbers. +7.5 against Texas. those only games of the year from, or the Texas is the only game of the year from Bet Online. I'll share some other games of the year from Circa here in a second. Odds to make the CFP at Bet Online plus 450. To win the CFP 66-1, which is tied for the 18th shortest odds. To win the SEC 33-1, those are the ninth shortest odds. Odds to win the Heisman for Jackson Arnold 28-1. Any thoughts on those, Jay?
Well, on the odds, I think the only thing that makes any type of sense to me is there's so many swing games in this thing that. That's a great price for Jackson Arnold. Do I think he's going to be invited to the Heisman? No, I don't. I do not have high hopes for Oklahoma. There are too many transfers, especially guys they are counting on to do a whole lot of heavy lifting across the offensive line. But if they are going to be competitive in a lot of these games, Jackson Arnold's going to lead the nation in passing. He's got a great receiving core. You mentioned Deion Burks, and, I mean, there are guys – who are coming back in that offense that new offensive coordinator Zach Literal is going to – he's a Mike Leach disciple. They're going to throw it around a bunch. And I honestly think Jackson Arnold may be potentially with a defense, as you mentioned, as experienced as this group that has a couple of future NFL dudes – and Danny Stutzman and Billy Bowman, the middle linebacker and the safety, respectively, I think this defense is not going to be as big a problem, especially now that they're comfortable in Brent Venables' system, as it has been the last couple of years. So the difference between this team being a real problem for the rest of the SEC or being a team looking to get to Shreveport is Jackson Arnold.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot on his shoulders.
The guy was a five-star recruit. The guy threw for 366 yards in the bowl game, but he had four of Oklahoma's six turnovers. And, I mean, I know that was in the first game of the new OC's system. He was stepping in because Dylan Gabriel opted out of the bowl game. Side question on this. If Dylan Gabriel had come back to Norman, do you not think 7.5 becomes 9?
All the numbers are better or shorter.
They get jacked because there are a lot of pieces to like. I mean, yeah, they could use a little more explosiveness in the backfield, but the Sawchuck kid had, I think, like 500-yard games in a row to end the regular season. So – I mean, they've got balance between their skill position guys. Are the transfer offensive linemen going to be ready? And is Jackson Arnold ready for his close-up?
Yeah, so they've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3. They've got 5 of their top 6 pass catchers back. You mentioned Nick Anderson, 38 catches, 798 yards, 10 touchdowns last year. The running back Sawchuck, 6.2 yards per carry average. 9 rushing touchdowns, 744 total yards. But, he was sharing a lot of the – I mean, they had a lot of other guys getting plenty of touches. He's going to be the workhorse this year. And, presuming he stays healthy, he'll be well over 1,000 yards. Let me give you some more games of the year before we go start going down the schedule and figuring out the win total and where we are on that. And like Jay mentioned, so many toss-up games. So all of these games of the year from Circa, they're all single-digit numbers, and all of them but one are 5 points or fewer. So here they are, Oklahoma, 3.5-point favorite at home to Tennessee, 8-point underdog to Texas and Dallas, 5-point dog at Ole Miss, a 2-point dog at Mizzou, a 2-point dog at home to Bama, and a 5-point dog at LSU. And now Phil Steele's national unit rankings will contrast as I've shared them with you, and then we'll see how it's now Venables' program and not Lincoln Riley's as Venable goes into year 3, because the rankings on defense are a hell of a lot better than the rankings on offense. And again, you know, with Phil Steele's national unit rankings, they're a useful tool. I'm not saying that I or Jay or you should always agree with any of these. You know, Jay hated the ranking on Tennessee's quarterbacks. I hated the ranking on Florida's quarterback room. There are plenty of instances like that, but it's just a useful tool, but you can disagree with it all you want. All right, here, 43 at quarterback, 21 at running back, number 6 at wide receiver, number 47 on the O-line, number 21 on the D-line, but number 2 at linebacker, number 2 in the secondary, 24 on special teams. So there's your Venables-Riley contrast. Now it seems they've got more talent on the defensive side of the ball. Phil Steele's preseason power ranking for Oklahoma was number 7, but his prediction for them to finish the year was number 20. So let me throw – I like Missouri. I like Missouri at home plus 2 to Oklahoma. That would be my favorite game of the year right there. And I would definitely lean Ole Miss minus 5 to them. Any thoughts on any of these – games of the year or unit rankings or whatever else?
I think they got a buzzsaw waiting for them in Red Stick to end the year too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that. Hey, from Halloween on, I know they've got an off week in there between Missouri and Alabama, and they get Alabama at home and that place will be nuts. And like so many things, one of the things that makes kind of forecasting a schedule like this so difficult is what happens if they stub their toe to a Tennessee or an Auburn, know that Texas is going to be a dogfight and all their goals are dashed, and then they got to go the final five games feature Ole Miss, Missouri, Alabama, and LSU, all of them top 15 to 18 preseason teams. And all of them could be in the hunt for an SEC championship.
And Ole Miss gets 2 weeks to prepare for Oklahoma, whereas Oklahoma
goes Texas, and then South Carolina at home, and then they got to go to Oxford.
And then when they go to Missouri, Missouri gets 2 weeks, and Oklahoma will be playing their fifth game in 5 weeks. So not only do you have two very difficult games, you know, coming after the Texas game, and you still got Alabama and LSU in late November, but Ole Miss and Missouri get a favorable spot, you know, with 2 weeks to prepare. So in other words, Oklahoma's kind of like my Gators. They best have a good September.
They need to leave Auburn 5-0 if you think you really want to feel good about going north of 7.5.
I don't think. I mean, we'll talk about this more as we break down every game, but they aren't going to be 5-0. I mean, they're losing at least one out of that Auburn and Tennessee at home, I think.
All right, release the hounds, my man.
All right, so we ready to go to game by game. All right, here we go. I think, are we both just going to give them 3-0 now? Tulane.
I think we give them 3-0, and I think I actually and you know this at the 5 at 10 on Thursdays I pick college football games. I don't know if Oklahoma can lay enough with a new quarterback, a new OC, a home game at night against a terrible Temple team. That screams to me 70-7.
I'm just not in the business of laying more than 40. So
I get you, but that's one of those that just screams. It's going to be – it'll be north of 40. But
41.5 right now, 41.5.
But that one screams to me, let everybody play. They got their backup quarterback is a transfer kid who's been at multiple schools who, when he gets on the field, it's going to be fine. That one just, yes. But to the big picture conversation of how do they get to 8 or more, 3-0 by September 14th, not only is projectable, it's a must.
Yeah, but I would be remiss if I did not mention, now I will be certainly mentioned that Michael Pratt and Willie Fritz are gone, but Tulane did go to Norman in 2021, and that was my favorite week one game that year. Tulane got an onside kick after they cut it to 40-35, and they got 2 fourth-and-longs they converted, and they were in Oklahoma territory with less than a minute left, down 5, driving. Did not happen.
They all right, the Tulane logo, friend or foe, because my wife wants to know why they are not called the Fighting Boogers.
Yeah, no, I've never really understood their logo.
Well, it just works out that, but still, with no Willie Fritz, no losing a lot of guts off that team, and Tulane's been good the last handful of years, but
yeah,
the Fighting Boogers are going to be down, and yeah, Oklahoma yeah will have not forgotten about yes the scare they got.
Yes, and so we're going to go 3-0, we agree. It's Temple, Houston, and Tulane at home. Okay, then we get Tennessee at home. And if memory serves, when we were doing Tennessee a week or two ago, I took Oklahoma to win this game, and you took Tennessee, correct?
Correct and correct, yes.
All right, so I've got them 4-0. You got them 3-1. I think they're going to lose at Auburn. I'll say they lose that one.
Well, one of those things is if they beat Tennessee, I would pick the same way you have picked if I was going to pick Oklahoma to beat Tennessee. I think that 4-0, they would go on the road for their first road game in the SEC and have a hard time. But I think after a loss, be real interesting to see how they rally the wagons. Because this, in a lot of ways, Oklahoma-Auburn is the swing game for the Sooners over-under. Or this two-week stretch, rather.
Right, right, yeah.
Because if you're 3-2, you're cooked.
Yes.
If you're 5-0, you got to feel real good.
Right, 100%. Okay, after Auburn, open date, then Texas. We both took Texas when we had the Texas conversation, so we're taking them now. And then they got South Carolina at home, and I got Oklahoma.
I do too.
So
it's one of those weird things that their conference home games, they got a bad year to go to like Ole Miss and Missouri and LSU, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd rather like go, almost no offense to South Carolina, but you'd almost rather go to South Carolina than you would Oxford.
Oh, this year? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. So, all right, we're 5-2. They go to Oxford, and Ole Miss has 2 weeks to prepare. Oklahoma doesn't. We both got Ole Miss.
Correct. 5-3.
5-3. Are we giving the Maine Black Bears any chance?
Nope. No. No. There's going to be a salty taste. This is another 70-7. And because now you want to talk about a wasted bye week. Or not? I guess that's not even a bye week, is it?
Right. Well, I mean.
Oh, my word. Okay. No, the bye week's between Missouri and Alabama. Okay. No, that's not a bye week. No.
Some might call it a bye week.
Yeah. Yes. No, but Oklahoma crushes
Maine.
Only they can eliminate forest fires, and they put the Black Bears to sleep.
6-3. Now, I do want to mention, if I'm not mistaken, the Maine Black Bears did go to Starkville, Mississippi during Sly Croom's tenure, and I believe they won outright. But I need to fact check that.
Well, you can fact check it all you want, but I don't think Sly Croom's going to be on the sidelines for Oklahoma.
No, I don't. I'm just going to give if any of the Black Bear fans or loyal listeners were offended, I feel like I should have given them that shout out. All right, 6-3. I got them losing at Missouri, and I like Missouri +2 in the games of the year.
Yeah, oh, I got a sneaky suspicion you may actually get done with the bets and ball games, and you may actually put a little – you may, as they say in Godfather 2, you may wet your beak on this one already.
Right, yes. Yes, yes. This is true. Then they finally get an open date, and Alabama does it.
The open date comes, and if this plays out, even with you and I playing ping pong on I think Tennessee wins in Norman and Oklahoma wins in Auburn, and you flip those. We both have them 6-4 right here.
Right. So they got to go 2-0. They're not going 2-0 here.
They're not going 2-0.
No.
So that to get over 7.5, you gotta have to then sweep these last two, and Alabama's better than you, and then you got to go to Red Stick. That's not happening.
No. No. So, I mean, even if we just call Alabama a toss-up game, we both have them losing at LSU, and it's over, or it's under, I should say.
Right.
All right, one thing we did not mention, I love their new defensive coordinator hire, who Rich Rodriguez, his name's Zach Alley. He was at Jacksonville State the last, I want to say, 2 years. He had been at Clemson under Venables, and R-Rod hired him as his DC. I want to say he was the youngest DC in all of FBS. I love this guy. I watched a lot of Jacksonville State football on Tuesday and Wednesday nights and standalone games last year. This guy brings pressure a lot. He's very aggressive defensive play caller, and I think he will do fantastic. I just had not mentioned that, so I just wanted to throw that in there. Any other thoughts on the Sooners before we start to wrap this bad boy up?
Honestly, if you start listing a short list, a top three, top five of players who carry the weight of teams that could be either contenders or teams that'll be fighting to figure out bowl eligibility, I think Jackson Arnold is high on that list of guys who, I mean, if you're talking about the swing difference in an LSU team that could contend for a playoff spot or maybe a 7 or 8 win team, I mean, Nussmeier's on that list too. And
oh, yes.
So, I mean, and yes, we especially in June, we so over-dramatize the quarterback and the value, but I don't know if you can, because those guys, I'm speaking as an Auburn fan, and I can't remember the last time we had good quarterback play, because if Peyton Thorne ain't any good, I don't care how many more pieces Hugh Freeze adds in the next couple of years, the guy pulling the trigger is still terrible.
I would say 2013 Nick Marshall, but if he doesn't underthrow that ball in the first play from scrimmage in the BCS title game.
Oh, Nick Marshall was a dude now. No, don't badmouth Nick Marshall in my presence, because I will drive to the panhandle.
I'm out. I've lost to FSU because Nick Marshall threw that ball 20 yards short on an easy touchdown on the first or second play of the game.
Yeah, we did, but we were within one score, and if Jameis doesn't throw the ball to the 17-foot-tall Kelvin Benjamin, then we win the natty. And, I mean, the other
part of it should have been up by 30 at halftime. I was so pissed.
Nick Marshall threw the arguably the college football play that changed play calling as we know it. In the first real Georgia example of the midline option against Alabama, when everybody came crashing, and he threw the nastiest Phil Negro knuckleball out to the wide receiver on the edge, who caught it and had nothing but green grass at Jordan Ayer in the Iron Bowl. So there will be no besmirching Nick Marshall on my watch, sir.
Now, I know he was fullback, but maybe he lined up. It wasn't the late great Lutzen.
No, that was the tight end. That was the game-winning touchdown where he did the dance. This was, yeah. I want to say, I mean, for some reason, all right, I'm looking it up.
Well, while he's looking it up, let me add this. So, on the Phil Steele's first team All-SEC, Oklahoma's got two guys on the defense, the safety, Billy Bowman, and the linebacker, Danny Stutzman. Bowman had 6 interceptions last year, and Stutzman had 104 tackles, 16 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, 3 passes broken up, an interception, and 2 QB hurries. So I just wanted to mention those guys.
It was Sammy Coates.
Ah, yes, Sammy Coates. All right. Before I give my UFC picks or anything else on OU, or are we good?
I know. I think I know you and I are very bullish on Ole Miss and Missouri, and bad year for Oklahoma to be going there. Of all the ones we've done, we're now passing the halfway point of the league. I have a little confidence and feel pretty strongly about Oklahoma under with that schedule. That schedule is tough sledding.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think it's my third favorite. Ole Miss and Missouri are kind of in a tie for number one, and I think Oklahoma under is probably my third favorite. Is that where you are?
Yeah, absolutely. Because look around. With the exception of Georgia, if we had to peg who we think maybe the top six teams in this league or seven teams in this league are, I think whatever order, it includes Alabama, Missouri, Ole Miss, Tennessee, LSU, Texas, Oklahoma plays all six, and then Georgia. So, yeah. I mean, that's a tough road to hoe.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. All right, my favorite by far, UFC 303 pick on Saturday night is Brian T. City Ortega in the co-main event. He's been a plus 120 to plus 125 underdog most of the week, but a little comeback action on him. I think it's more like plus 10 to plus 115 right now. If you go to majorwager.com and you look in the headlines on the right rail about five or six stories down, I wrote a story about it, which gives all my reasoning for liking Ortega. I have a couple of other small opinions that I'll be tweeting out or maybe even having another byline on Major Wager. But the one to remember, the one that I like and I'm pretty heavily invested in, is Ortega as a small dog in the co-main event. All right. Any last words from you?
Nope. Looking forward to next week. Everybody have a good 4th of July. Be safe.
Considered 4th of July weekend or is it next week?
No, it's next week. But by the time we talk again, July 4th will already happen. Don't eat too many hot dogs. Don't blow your fingers off with fireworks. Have some fun, but don't be nuts.
Wait, time out. What day does July 4th fall on?
I think it's a Wednesday.
Oh, well, then okay. Then I'm fine doing next Friday. I was about to say we might have to do Tuesday. But we can record next Friday. I can do July 6th, no problem. All right.
Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to the crew.
Yep. Thanks to Southeastern 14, Bet Online. He's Jay Greason. I'm Brian Edwards. Have a great weekend. Over and out.